Today's program was brought to you by Whole Foods Market. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
Okay, everybody, it's time for a game. I'll sing my song and you do just what the song says. Here we go. Rub your tummy just like this. Rub it all day long. Rub your tummy, rub it hard while we sing our song. Rub, 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 rub. Play and sing along.
Wow, 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 wow. I never get sick of my own theme song, everybody. This is Alessandra, and you are tuning in to Growing Good, always airing out of Heritage Radio, built in the beautiful Roberta's in Bushwick, New York. I'm so excited about my segment today because it started out in my mind as doing, you know, an homage to rad, earth-friendly, holistic working moms, because I know, you know, a lot of times I kind of, you know, do the segments on like the hands-on, but these moms are hands-on. They're supporting their families, they're involving their children in their businesses, and my guest today has been called the Mary Poppins of the freelance designer world, and her name is Eliza Starbuck. Eliza, are you there?
I am. Hi. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for your support. I was able to talk to Eliza just the other night. You know, of course, we had to do lots of back and forth, texting and calling with our schedules to get down with each other as moms. But we have a tradition, Eliza, before we start the segment, where we do introduce our miracles on the show. Your little girl.
Oh, okay. well, my daughter is Bachi. She's two. And she's not with me here today, but she's definitely a miracle every moment in my life.
And I heard actually from someone, does Sachi mean happy?
It does. In Japanese, it means happiness.
That's so awesome. That's so wonderful. But getting back to Eliza, we're going to be talking today about her process as a designer through her own life, through her pregnancy, into after her birth of Sachi and into her current projects. So what I wanted to start with first, obviously, was a project that she was doing during the night she found out she was pregnant. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it wasn't exactly the night I found out I was pregnant, but it was during the period of time where I was sort of coming into the awareness that I was pregnant. And at the same time, I was starting a very involved project called the Uniform Project, where I designed a dress for a woman who wanted to wear a dress for a whole year to show how many ways she could wear one dress. And so I designed a dress that was multifunctional for her purposes. And we, you know, basically promoted the concept of sustainable consumption.
Right. And by sustainable consumption in the design world, she means where, you know, you're not, you're using the same thing every day the way that you would, you know, that's what sustainability is. So then she
right.
wore this
it's
dress.
Non-disposable.
Non-disposable. And just multipurposing.
things that you get more use out of than just one wear.
Right.
It's really getting more bang for your buck, but also using your items consciously.
Right, and obviously during a recession that we were experiencing at the time, this got a lot of press and was a huge hit.
Mm-hmm. It got a lot of attention.
Which led to you deciding to do a small line of equally sustainable items called Bright Young Things.
Yeah, so I think after a year of my friend wearing this dress, we got so many people saying, I really, really need that dress. If I had that dress, I would not buy five other dresses this year. You know, I want to take on this challenge myself. There were so many women who were empowered by our project that I felt there was a reason to offer it to a wider audience. So we started selling it, and I started my line based on the concept of designing clothes that do more for your wardrobe.
And what was amazing, I read a lot of press on you online as we were talking, that she then created 8 articles, right?
Mm-hmm. Eight items that could be worn multiple ways.
Multiple ways. And a lot of the press that I read and, you know, with Eliza's answers to the interviews were that what became important to her throughout this system, or even maybe probably before, you must have been thinking about this a long time, is that doing something like this cuts down overproduction, which a lot of lines, designing lines do. So you're going to have a lot of, pollution, just overproduction, things that just go to waste. But mm-hmm. also, she was doing things made to order, which also cut down overproduction.
That's right.
Right. So she was saying, which was exciting, which was interesting to me too, where the difficult part was that the consumer had to wait 8 weeks, for something. And a lot of times in this world, we're like, no, I want it now. I want it now. I want it now.
Yeah, it's asking a lot, and I think... It goes to show that I think there is a evolving consumer, because there was this audience of people who were all willing to wait, and they couldn't wait to order their dress, but they were totally fine with waiting to get it so that we could make it and not have any wastage.
Right, and this translates so much to so many other programs we have, Eliza, on Growing Good, where it's like, if you want to get the carcinogen-free shampoo, it's not on the market. It's not at CVS. You have to order it online. And it does take a little bit of more planning, which obviously adds to a long list of responsibilities we have as parents. But, that's exactly what it is. It's like you just have to make these choices for yourself, and it does take a little bit more work, but... if we all do it, then obviously it will translate into society, and years from now it won't be such, it'll just get easier and easier to live sustainably.
This is true, and the miracle of this period of time is that we do have the internet, so anything that you want, you can ultimately get. You just have to do maybe a little more research if you want something right. That's a little more consciously conceived.
Right, and speaking of that, tell me more about the fabrics that you use, because I read a lot about how it was important to you to not be using fabrics that came from halfway around the world in factories that you couldn't monitor, the ethics and politics of it. So what's your take on fabric use?
Well, in fashion, there is no real sustainability. That's one thing. People, I think, get a little hung up on there's one solution and there isn't. There's many solutions and there's no solutions at the same time. So it's kind of for me, it was important to try and source fabrics that were available on the local market rather than producing new if I could avoid it. Anytime you could do organic, it's great, but a lot of times consumers can't afford it. So that mm-hmm. was something that I've continually wanted to get into and have had a lot of pushback on that from the market, just because people can't afford to spend twice the price just to have organic on the label. But then in terms of production, I always tried to have my production done locally in New York City so I could go to the factory and see what was happening, make sure that the quality was good and make sure that the workers were being treated fairly.
Yeah, and that's very important. I mean, I don't think I ever mentioned to anybody that I actually had to go to China for work once, and I'm not slamming the whole country, because I did not go to Shangri-La, I did not go to the beautiful... places that promote so much amazing holistic meditation. But I did go to Hong Kong, and it was traumatizing for me. And then I took a boat to the mainland to see some factories for my family's jewelry business. And it was a hard decision that we had to make for ourselves, but we did not go that route, even though all our competitors were, and our price remained higher. But it's just a choice that we had to make. We did not want to support that. I mean, I don't even want to talk about the stuff that I saw. It was really, 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 really inhumane.
Yeah, I think the more you read about it and the more you research it, and I invite more people to sort of look into that and look into that element of it, and I think a lot of people sort of were awakened by the recent Apple scandal. But I think the more we all look at that, the more we realize that it's important to know where your things are being made, and for companies to be transparent about that information so that we can make an educated decision on whether or not we can afford to spend a bit more on something that was made locally in a more humane or ethical or environmentally sound way.
Right. And Eliza was telling me that when she's, approaching any project as a freelancer, I mean, this was her own line, But, you know, she's just her, some of her main points are just, you know, she comes in as a freelancer to help stabilize situations and bring quality up. So do you like to use, you know, like vintage fabric? So it's not like you're necessarily buying vintage because you have a new piece. But have you been able to, is that something that you're really into? Like if you find like rolls of like vintage fabric, or is that just then you can't sell them in quantity?
Yeah, that's a hard one. That's not something that the industry has quite yet figured out how to do. There are a few people who have been good at it, and there's a couple design houses that do that, but it limits your options in production and also in quantities. So most companies don't take that route. And so as a freelancer, that's usually not something that I have a lot of say on. But for me, what I like to bring to the table is raising the bar on quality, because I think in companies it's really easy to sort of lose sight of, you know, these elements when you're busy going to meetings, you know, running around trying to please all the masters that be in a corporation.
And the competition of whatever the other designers are doing.
Exactly. It's a really competitive world. So you've got companies constantly paying attention to what the competition is doing and trying to, you know, beat out the price, things like this. And price drives a lot of it. So I think it's a blessing that I can be a freelancer and sort of be on the outside of all those issues and be able to come in and bring quality to the work and sort of just get the design team back in a good place so that they, you know, get reset so that they see, oh yeah, we need to be focusing on quality. That's the job of design.
That's awesome. And then just getting back to your motherhood. So basically Eliza, you know, had this, you know, amazing success and, you know, also just aside and success, by success, we mean, you know, that she did something that wasn't, you know, done before. And she brought attention to a process of making clothes it from a different perspective, which is just such a huge achievement. And I mean, I'm just so impressed by you. So during her pregnancy, she did this, then she did the Bright Young Things. And I read something like you sold like all 365 pieces like within like the first day or something, they went for sale.
Within 5 days we sold 365 little black dresses at the end of the uniform project, because, you know, people were so excited about the product. And it was interesting because that was all happening within the first 3 months of my daughter's life. And so it sort of coincided her birth with this sort of explosion of my new business and working into just sort of offering these products to the world.
Right. And then that leads us to the next part of the interview, where it's like, okay, so then you've had this explosion, you've got a 3-month-old baby, and we're always having to reprioritize, and, you know, our children are growing, and it's you know, it's different when they're just like little baby and you strap them on, and, you know, but then they start to need more, and, you know, your family starts to need more. And so at this point, Eliza was telling me that she kind of had to reprioritize. Can you give us moms out there just struggling with these things a little bit of, you know, how it went for you?
Absolutely. I think, you know, you kind of really hit the nail on the head. When she was really little, I was taking her to meetings, strapped on, going to fabric vendors and things, and she was strapped on me, and you know, I was able to do that. But as she got older, it was something that, you know, I couldn't take her with me to work. It wasn't appropriate, or it didn't work for her needs. And so I got to a point where I did have to sort of readjust my values and my needs, and you know, you get to a point where you can really see clearly what is necessary and what isn't as a parent. I think you hit this sort of wall where you're like, okay, I need to like clean house and get rid of anything that isn't functioning to the highest efficiency for my family's needs. And so I kind of reevaluated at that point and realized that having my own company wasn't necessarily the most efficient way to use my working time, and also wasn't allowing me to be available for my daughter on the level that I wanted to be available. So
because of just like working through nights and just thinking, when it's your own company, it's just, oh my gosh, it just takes over your entire being, because it's your heart.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, at this stage in her life, maybe later things will always change, but
then they go to college, Eliza, and then you're like, what am I gonna do with myself? I've already got like a plan. I'm just gonna invest my life in horses. I'm gonna miss Wally so much.
I mean, it changes so often, and that's kind of another miracle with having kids is that phases. You go through so many phases, and you get to mark them with the growth of your child and the way they change and the way you respond to those phases of theirs. So it's interesting. It goes hand in hand.
Right, but I mean, you were still able to make the decision that, okay, this isn't what's right for my family, but walk away with that accomplishment and pat yourself on the back and use that, obviously, to re-enter the fashion world, which is what we're going to be talking about on our second segment. We do have to take our first break. The music that I've picked today, because we got to give some daddy love throughout all this, Eliza's husband, Toshi, kind of took the role of Mr. Mom in such an amazing way, and we've been lucky enough to have him as playdates, and he has taught me so much as a mother watching him interact with Sashi. So I've picked Joan Baez and Bob Dylan for the two of you today, and this is big for me. I'm in my teens when I and I know everybody's not a big fan of Joan, but you know, I'm certain everybody loves Bobby, but this is the two of them singing together, and it's dedicated to my favorite mommy and dad. Really, you guys inspire me, Eliza and Toshi.
Thank you so much.
No tears, no sorrow. Cling to me with all your might and never let me go.
At Whole Foods Market, we review each and every product that hits our shelves. Our cleaning products are no exception. Our EcoScale ranking system rates each household cleaner so you know what you're getting. Now, during Earth Month and any time of the year, learn more at WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Alessandra. This is Growing Good. I am with my guest, Eliza Starbuck. She is a fashion designer who, in the past, also just to give her a little bit of resume up there, because I'm so proud of you, even though it's your past. She did design on and off for Coach Outerwear for 4 years, which is really awesome, Eliza. Good for you. Are you there?
Thank you. Yes, I'm here.
I mean, Coach is just like, wow. But she has been applying sustainability to her designs and just being a conscious consumerism. That's what we were talking about in the first segment, and we're going to be talking about her current project now, which is really exciting because it's going hand in hand with her motherhood. She is designing the spring line for Morgan and Milo.
Yes, which is a kids wear company that started out as a shoe company, but now they're moving into clothing, and we're seeing a lot of success and you know, great feedback from what we've been working on, and just providing kids clothes that are super durable, really playful, really comfortable, but also, you know, great looking.
Yeah, and we were talking about last night how amazing it is that, I mean, you must just come in, but you said your partner is also a mother, correct? Or the person that you work with closely?
So one of the other designers there, the shoe designer there, is also a mother, and she's got a son, and I have a daughter, so it's kind of an interesting balance because we both kind of get both sides, because clothes for little boys is very different than clothes for little girls on some levels.
But it's so exciting to me because, honestly, shopping for my son, a lot of times I really question, and it's pretty obvious to me that this item, or if I get them as presents, was not made by a parent. Like, there's just no possible way, because it's just like, does not work on so many levels in terms of things that we were talking about, like comfort, or Eliza was explaining to me more about, like, you know, from her experiences being a mom, like, kids don't really like things like high up on their neck or like scratchy, right?
Mm-hmm. Kids are really, really particular about what they will wear and won't wear, and it has to be comfortable. And if there's any aspect that's itching or bothering them, they just will refuse to wear an item. So I think as a designer, you have to be really conscious of those things. And so it is pretty necessary to know your customer as a child.
I know. So this is new for you. How long have you been there?
I've been doing it for this is my first season in the company, and I'm really enjoying it. It's such a fun challenge. It really does make you get fully into the mindset of, A, what it is to be a kid wearing clothing,
yeah.
And also how it is for, just thinking in terms of parents and parenthood and what is important for a parent when they're shopping for their kids.
Yeah, and you were talking a lot about using a lot of like elastic around the body so that you can kind of grow into, you can use it longer and your child can kind of like, even if they're growing, the elastic will expand.
Yes, there's a lot of design elements that people may not be aware of that are put into children's wear that aren't put into, obviously, adults' clothes, mm-hmm. but those things are there, they're sort of engineered into clothing for kids so that they do expand and grow with the kid as much as possible. I mean, ultimately, you want these clothes to last as long as they do, but kids grow so fast, then they need to be able to be hand-me-downs for the little sister or little brother or friends. So you have to make clothes that are really durable, that are good quality fabrics, and that have these engineering elements in them so that they work longer for the kid that's wearing them.
So this is also good for, if anybody's tuning in, for all you like aunts and uncles and caregivers and babysitters shopping for your children, because honestly, I got the cutest stuff. Like, I got these Nike high tops that were just so awesome, but I could never, ever, ever put them on Wally because they had so many laces. I was so worried and paranoid. It did not matter how many knots I put these laces. Like, you just don't know how the kids do it. Like and then I would just be like, my kid's gonna just fall on his face and break his nose. And a lot of the stuff like that has been presents, and I'm so thankful. But this is
non-functioning design.
That's non-functioning design for a child. But so this is your first children's line, right?
It is.
I mean, aside from, we do have to point out that every time I've been on a play date with Eliza's daughter, Sachi, she is usually wearing some sort of like miracle, amazing top, or like top that's a dress, or like dress that's a skirt that was made by her mom, Eliza. I've seen like 4 or 5 pieces that were like really like soft. Like one of them was like kind of like a quilt kind of softness, like kind of like vest, but that crossed across her chest. Do you know what piece I'm talking about?
Yes, that was a little sort of smock.
It was so beautiful. Thing. But I mean, every time I'm like, this is so amazing. Toshi's like, Eliza made that.
Well, I mean, and that's part of the fun of being a designer mom is, and anybody can do it really, but it's making clothes that are...
No, but I don't know how to work a sewing machine. I don't know how to work a sewing machine. So you got to give yourself credit.
And so that's my job, is to make sure, and I try and do that with the clothes that I make for Morgan and Milo, but, in making clothes for my daughter, I really think about, what is important to a little kid? Is comfortable? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be cool enough for the summer? Is it going to cover her skin so that she doesn't get a sunburn? All these little elements are really important, and in making clothes for my daughter, it sort of has helped me be a better designer for Morgan and Milo so that I can really design clothes that function for kids there too.
Yeah, and that, as a working mom, that must be great too, because don't you feel closer to your daughter during the days, even if during the times that you're apart? Because, I mean, she's there with you and you're in your thoughts.
I'm thinking about her, yeah.
That's so awesome. I'm so happy for you. Because other than this, you're also part-time at Ann Taylor right now.
I freelance around the industry in different companies, and I'll work at one, at Loft or at Coach, or
it's so cool. You're just like
companies.
The person they call when they're like SOS, SOS.
Yeah,
bring in Eliza.
I come in and I sort of help stabilize teams, and I provide a lot of support. And just try and get them back online so that they can function better and move forward with what they need to do.
So this means that you also have a lot of know-how in numbers, right? Because a lot of times there must be budget problems, right? With the lines, or is that somebody else?
Every company's got budget problems. that's something they always have to work out. But, you know, it's usually my services I provide, and they work them out into their budgets and for however long they need to, and then I move on and do something else.
Right, but that's so great, and you're never, like, stuck, and that's really worked out for you and your family. You feel good.
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting is thinking back to, you know, my pregnancy and going through that uniform project process. It was a lot of research I did at that time, and it was creative, you know, and it was coinciding with what was happening with my baby and my body, mm-hmm. and it was this creative gestation process where I was learning, developing, building, growing, producing these ideas. And I feel like that was training for what happened next, which was really getting into the real world of design and companies that do design and produce things for consumers. And the more I sort of have learned about sustainability and design and what good design is and what people really need, I feel like the better I am able to provide good design for the companies that I work with.
So other than the obvious research, which is you and your daughter, since this is your first children's line, like, what else, have you been just, like, research? Like, how do you get prepared for, like, a whole new job like that? It's just so amazing. Where do you find the time? And where do you find the time?
Well, time is one of those things that there's never enough of, but there's also, you know, it's a matter of making time rather than finding it. You know, I think I just sort of walk into these new spaces and experiences with sort of an open heart and try and observe what is necessary, what is needed, and what the company needs. And then I just sort of embrace it. And with being a freelancer, I can schedule my time so that I have enough time for my daughter. I don't, you know, I try and stick to my strict rule of never working on the weekend so that I'm completely committed and conscious of interacting and being with and spending time with my daughter.
And right now you were telling me that you're actually designing Morgan and Milo in your home because they're based in Boston, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I design it out of my home, and you know, I may be doing that at night after my daughter goes to bed, or one of the days of the week if it's if I'm working in the city as a freelancer, 4 days a week I might spend the fifth day at home working out of my office there.
Right.
But you know, I have a routine with Sachi where in the morning I wake up with her and I sort of, she helps me get out the door and we make breakfast together or smoothies together and coffee and then I come home and I make dinner and I put her to bed, and so we have sort of this routine where she is a part of my every single day, and I devote, you know, a certain amount of time each day just to spend quality time with her and be conscious in my interactions with her. So I try not to be texting or emailing or anything while I'm with her.
And I would love, I mean, we have a couple more minutes in this segment, and that's what I would love to end with, just more advice. I mean, because I know for me, like, I even just getting the radio show ready, and you're saying that you have an office at home, like, I have to, like, literally leave my house because Wally is just like, mommy. So how do you, how do you do the office and the Liza at home at the same time? Like, how does that work?
Well, I have to give all the credit to my husband. I have this partner that is really amazing. He's totally supportive. He is the other parent. He's a fully committed parent, and he's available to fill in and give Sachi his undivided attention when I can't. And so we schedule our time between the two of us so that, you know, I tend to be 3 days a week and he's four with her. And then I fill in the space, you know, before and after work. Yeah. But you know, I have this partnership with my husband where he is really there for me and allows me to have the space when I need to close the door for my office and go to work. We say, okay, I'm going to work, and I say, bye,
Sachi. But I love that, and I get all that, but, like, you know, Sachi just gets that, or does he have to actually take her outside of the house for you to have peace?
No, she totally understands.
Oh, and so Wally would be, like, banging on the door. you know what I mean? Because I'm sure a lot of parents, you know, it's a different detachment for everybody.
Yeah, it is. It's different for everybody, and I can't exactly put my finger on it, but I think for me, I'm very much at peace that it's okay for me to shut the door and go to work because it's what I need to do at that time. So I don't leave any energy behind for her to pick up on where any information that she should be banging on the door. She shouldn't be, and she knows it, you know, and so that message is coming clearly through the energy of me and Toshi both. We make it very clear that Mama's going to work, and she'll be back later, and now it's time to play with Papa and read stories and do puzzles. So
answered my question, and that's so true, because I'm going to apply that, because I think that when I'm trying to do something, I think that probably there is a lot of anxiety there and anxiousness, because I'm trying to figure out, like, oh, are you going to be okay with this? And I'm maybe like going back and forth, and you're totally right, Eliza. Or I'll misplace my keys, you know, and then I'm just like coming in and out of the door, which creates that anxiety. And it's because I love my son. You're so right. Thank you. I'm going to apply
magnets.
That.
No, they observe. Yeah. Our emotions and our energy at such an acute level and on such a micro level that most adults are kind of numb to. But kids pick every single mental pattern up from your brain. So are feeling anxious about
leaving to work,
they're
going to
feel anxious about it. And if you know that this is what you have to do and you need to do this right now, and they're going to be okay, and that's the feeling and the energy you put into the world around you, your kid's going to be okay with it, I believe.
Well, I believe it too, and thank you so much, because just the way that you described it, you always know from it's like we're scientists, where it's experiments, and it's like that's what you've applied, and it is working for Sachi, and telling me, I'm literally sitting here thinking about me getting ready to go out to work, and it's like crazy. So thank you.
I'm glad. I mean,
but sometimes it just takes another mother to tell you, you know, and that's what this show is all about. Thank you so much, Eliza, for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I really hope that we get like some sort of invite to the fashion show. I don't care. I'll go to Boston in spring. Do they do kids fashion shows? What's that about?
We don't do a runway show yet, but
that would be hilarious.
But
seriously, I do want to know. That's the last question. Like, when this line debuts, how does it differ from adult wear? You do like a campaign, a print campaign, or how do you let people know about your work?
Well, it'll be released next spring. It goes out in spring 2013, and it'll be available at Garnet Hill. So that's our main supplier at the moment. It's also sold at some select boutiques, but Garnet Hill is probably the best place to find the line, and the work that I've been working on will be available next spring.
But also online, obviously, right?
Online, yes. GarnetHill.com probably will carry it.
Wait, but is Garnet Hill an actual store?
It's a catalog site. And then also
Morgan and Milo.
Would be a great place to find it, and we sell items there as well. So both places would be a great place to pick up the line that I've been working on.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a famous line. I mentioned it to some of my other moms. It's been around. It's a really, 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 I'm really happy for you. Looking to get in touch with Eliza after she is done with the spring line, she's got her resume up on LinkedIn. I don't even know how to spell that. I'm so like new to everything. I think it's LINK. So anyways, you guys know what I'm talking about. Eliza Starbuck. If you're feeling like you need a Mary Poppins of the design world, Eliza Starbuck can be contacted at LinkedIn. Thanks, Eliza.
Thank you.
See you up in the woods. This is Alessandra. Here's another Joan Baez, Bob Dylan for you guys. Tune in next week. Love and light.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.